How do we respond to the news of now the fall of Matt Lauer? And how can we develop a true pro-life mentality?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it was headline news today. This is what you basically woke up with this morning. New York Times headlines, NBC fires Matt Lauer over sexual misconduct allegation. Wow. I mean, one minute it's NBC's Matt Lauer, and then it's CBS's Charlie Rose. I'm looking at a list here. NPR's Michael Oreskes, Amazon's Roy Price, New York Times, Glenn Thrush, and Hollywood, from Harvey Weinstein to Kevin Spacey to Louis C.K. and others. Now in Congress, is it Al Franken, John Conyers? Who's next? How do we respond? Well, here's how President Trump responded. He tweeted this out. Wow, Matt Lauer was just fired from NBC for, quote, inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace. But when will the top executives at NBC and Comcast be fired for putting out so much fake news? Check out Andy Lack's past. And then, right after that, he tweeted a follow-up message, and it was this. So now that Matt Lauer is gone, when will the fake news practitioners at NBC be terminated the contract to Phil Griffin? And will they terminate low ratings Joe Scarborough based on the unsolved mystery that took place in Florida years ago? Investigate. Now, I understand that President Trump really sees the liberal media as his enemy, and for good reason. The reporting against him has been overwhelmingly negative, and as many mistakes as he's made, the media has piled on and added to it, and it's been ugly in its reporting. I understand that, but this is not the time to gloat. And with all respect to the office of the president, when you have glass houses in your own past, do you just say, well, investigate the glass houses in other people's past? I don't think that's the right way to respond. That's why I tweeted out, I don't recommend gloating when someone you don't like falls or is exposed. Better to grieve over their loss and take stock of the cost of sin. Better to stay low and search your own heart than to mock someone else's disgrace. And then author, professor, editor Jay Richards added in response, and never ever take pleasure in the destruction of anyone's marriage. Pray for them. If you really don't like them, pray even more for them. And then a woman by the name of Adelina added in Proverbs 24, 17 and 18, verses I thought of immediately today. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and let not your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and be displeased and turn away his anger from him. Now look, I agree with the observations that the vast majority of these abuse cases or allegations of abuse are over on the left, the so-called champions of women's rights. Hey, if you want to encourage an abortion, you're not really for women. If you want to diminish the importance of gender distinctions, you're not really for women. If you want to do what Hollywood does and exalt women as sexual objects, you're not really for women. So I agree that conservative principles of life are much more honoring of women and much more protective of women. But I'm not going to sit here and throw stones. I mean, one day it's producers, another day it's politicians, another day it could be pastors and preachers. And even though most of us, hopefully the vast majority of us, have not done what some of these people are accused of doing, if God wanted to expose a wrong attitude, a wrong thought, a wrong word, a wrong deed in our lives, he could damn us all. So I say, when you see these things happen, be sober, grieve over the people's loss, pray for their repentance and redemption, and make sure your own house is in order. That, friend, is how we should respond. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Hey, listen, I want to restate the obvious, but I am not here simply as a conservative talk radio host, nor am I simply on the radio as a preacher or a teacher. I'm here to be a gospel-based voice of moral and cultural revolution. I'm here to be your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society and chaos and a church all too often in compromise. And therefore, what's happening around us, I want to give insight on. Now, every so often, we're just going to report something happening because it's important news, we want to share it, or we have limited time and just want to make sure you're aware of something. But 99.9% of what we do, we want to address issues, and we want to come with a kingdom perspective. We want to address things in a constructive way, in a way that will help you know how to sort these things out. There are enough people bashing on the left and on the right, and there's tons of great preaching and teaching on radio and TV and online and other places. So you can get all of that, and we've got plenty of our own preaching and teaching you can benefit from as well. On God TV, we've got a weekly preaching show called Word on Fire that airs on Sundays, where I preach on holiness and revival and repentance and themes that are dear to me. On our Ask Dr. Brown website, we have a sermon archive where you can listen to many of my past messages and some recent messages. So we make all that available to you at AskDrBrown.org. But we're on the radio primarily not to preach, not to teach, but to be your voice. So what do we do when we have these scandals taking place? And I don't watch a lot of TV news, and I don't watch the early morning shows. Number one, I'm a late night person, so I'm not watching early morning shows. Number two, it's never in my life habit has been part of what I watch. And number three, if I'm getting news, I'm normally getting it by reading it or by watching clips afterwards. But certainly, Matt Lauer, well-known and greatly loved. And when I asked Nancy this morning, have you heard the latest news? She was, Matt Lauer? Are you serious? But we all know that these are TV personalities and only God knows what's happening in people's private lives. But, you know, again, he was not one of the ones that you were expecting or he's probably going to be next, right? So how do we respond as believers to this? The list is getting longer and longer. There's an article from about a week ago now. It's entitled, From Politicians to Producers. Here are 50 prominent men accused of sexual misconduct since Weinstein's downfall. And it's got some of the pictures there, and some of them, they're just accusations against them. And the stars or the celebrities or the radio or TV or whoever the people are, they're denying allegations. In other cases, they've admitted to them. This just exploding. This has obviously been under the surface, and now it's coming to the surface. But you have to recognize this as a moment of divine shaking. You have to recognize this as one of those moments when a lot of stuff is getting uncovered. And you might say, well, good, I didn't like Al Franken. Well, I didn't like John Kine. Well, I didn't like Harvey Weinstein. I didn't like, oh, okay, fine. Maybe for one reason or another you opposed the people politically or ideologically, or you thought they were responsible for putting out smut or influencing the younger generation in a wrong way or whatever. I mean, none of these people that were listed were on my list of personal heroes or, yeah, that's the one I'm cheering for. Obviously, Judge Roy Moore, the best-known conservative now that's being accused, and we still don't know the truth there. Some are sure he's guilty. Some are sure he's not guilty. I can say for certainty we don't know with 100% certainty. All right? God knows, and the accusers and the accused know. But the list of people, they're... I don't look to Hollywood in terms of ethics and morality. There's some good people there, but I don't look to Hollywood for that purpose. And Congress, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of confidence or hope that Congress is going to clean up its own act. In fact, my latest article that came out this morning dealt with that very issue. three ways that Congress might be forced to clean up its own act. And I suggested, you know, it could be that someone like John Conyers, his lawyer said, you put too much pressure on him, he's going to bring others down. In other words, you got dirt on me, I got dirt on you. That's why we keep our mouths shut. All right, that coalition of silence. I got skeletons in my closet, you got them in yours, so we'll just keep the closet locked and throw away the key. Conyers, allegedly, may have the plan. His lawyer says, you put too much pressure on him, he's going to bring others down with him. How many others? That's one way Congress could be forced to clean up its own act. And another is, if more and more people come forward and say, hey, you're guilty, you're guilty, you're guilty. More and more women speak up. More and more of those who've been harassed or abused speak up. And the charges are credible. Congress is going to have to act on it. And then thirdly, if they don't act on it, then the court of public opinion, people are just going to get fed up and not vote for certain candidates, and their own parties are going to have to replace them with other people. Who knows where this thing's going to shake down? At times like this, I don't sit around and gloat. Look, in the 1980s, many of you that are old enough remember this. Jim Baker, prominent TV preacher, ended up in prison for years, wrote a book, I Was Wrong, publicly repented, and has sought to live a very different life since. And his TV show now is quite different from what it used to be. Whether you like Jim Baker's TV show or not, it's poles apart from what it was years ago. So he gets exposed for sexual sin and then financial corruption, ends up going to jail, really getting the book thrown at him by a very hard judge, goes to jail for his financial crimes, and writes a book, I Was Wrong. So he gets exposed, and before everything else happened with the financial fraud and the jail sentence and the admission of guilt, then another prominent TV evangelist, Jimmy Swaggart, starts going after him with real ferocity. Instead of mourning over his fall, he was merciless. And I really liked Jimmy Swaggart. I loved his preaching. I loved his message of holiness. I remember, you know, stand on the Bible, stand on the Word, and his gospel songs. And man, he was anointed. He was called. I didn't like Jim Baker's show in those days. I thought, you know, the whole PTL thing, and I thought it was superficial. I'm just telling you what I thought, not that I'm God and making right judgment. I'm just telling you what I thought back then. But I liked Jimmy Swaggart's preaching, hardcore gospel. But I remember when he was going after Jim Baker and mocking him after his fall, I just said, ooh, you don't do that. You don't want to do that. You don't want to set yourself up as the righteous one and, you know, impeccable and flawless by mocking others. If you want to talk about the tragedy of it and the sin of it, do it with some brokenness. Well, then not long after that, he gets exposed for sexual sin. And then not once, but twice. I say all this with pain because I remember when this happened in the late 1980s. Was it around 1987, somewhere around there? It broke my heart. And when I heard word of Jimmy Swaggart's fall, first I said, no, it can't be. I remember what I was, where I was and who told me in Maryland. And I thought, no, it can't be. And then when I found out it was true, I was not throwing stones at Jimmy Swaggart. I was searching my own heart, my own life. No, I wasn't guilty of what he was guilty of. But can you say you've been totally perfect in thought, word, and deed 24/7? That if Jesus took all your secret thoughts, maybe ambition, maybe jealousy, maybe greed, maybe lust, maybe some hateful thoughts, wherever you struggle, whatever the issues are, and he displayed them on the internet for everyone to see, is there a single one of us who would not be embarrassed? Is there a single one of us who would not say, God, don't do that. You've never thought, since you've been a believer, you've never thought thoughts you're embarrassed about. You've never looked at someone a wrong way or thought of someone a wrong way or allowed something unclean to fester in your heart and mind. Never, ever. So I looked at this as, number one, examine your own heart. Number two, this is a picture of the state of the Church of America. This is a picture of our corruption and our sin. Now right now, the focus is on the world, the society. But our response is important because, look, God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. So when you humble yourself, when you take responsibility, if you have skeletons in your closet, then you make things right. You go to people you've sinned against. You make things right where you need to. You humble yourself before the Lord. If you do that, God gives you grace, and God has mercy, and God restores. But when you proudly attack others with a harsh, judgmental, merciless spirit, the way you judge others, you'll be judged in turn. Something to think about, isn't it? We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. In a few minutes, we are going to shift gears. In a few minutes, we are going to talk about pro-life and talk about how to change our mentality, not just how to get involved in the pro-life movement, but how to change our mentality to develop a culture of life. And I want to throw out a question for you. In what ways would you say we have become a culture of death? In what ways have we as Americans become a culture that is strongly a culture of death? Not that we don't celebrate life, not that we don't love life, but in what ways have we become a culture that is fixated on death, focused on death, either in entertainment or our general mentality? I found it significant that Australia yesterday officially said that same-sex, quote, marriage is the law of the land. The people voted for that. A strong majority voted for it. And then the parliamentary congressional leaders there, the governmental leaders there in Australia, then turned it into law in response to that. And the same day, they passed a euthanasia bill. I find that not non-coincidental. In other words, I do not find that coincidental. That's what I meant to say. There is a spiritual connection between the two. So I want to talk to you about that in a moment. But first, let me draw your attention to a verse in James, Jacob, chapter 2. All right, I want to give you practical guidelines in terms of how to handle some issues. All right, my Bible software is stuck on the side of my page here. There we go. All right, got it here. Okay, let me just get it. Wow, okay, here we go. So Jacob, James, chapter 2. And listen to what's written there. It's an interesting verse, and I think it's one that we should take to heart when we are discussing these issues of people falling, leaders falling, now Matt Lauer, different ones being exposed. And it's not that they committed the sin or the crime, allegedly or confessedly, admittedly, yesterday. It's that things from the past, 6 months ago, a year ago, 5 years, 10 years, they're all coming to light. Now, again, when you have repented of something, when you've dealt with it before God and man, it's in the past. Let's say you're a pastor and you committed adultery 25 years ago. You stepped down from ministry. You went through a restoration process of 1 year doing no ministry, just sitting, getting your life back together, restoring your marriage, and then were restored back to ministry. And part of your message has always been the forgiveness of God and the grace of God. And that was 25 years back. And it's a known part of your testimony. Well, no one can throw that. Oh, we're exposing. No, that's out. That's been dealt with before God. And other things, I believe if there was something that happened that only God knew about, and I don't mean you committed a crime. I don't mean something that you have to go public with. But something that only God knew about, and you truly repented before God and turned to him and he had mercy and cleansed you of that thing. And again, it's not a crime that was committed or something against another person that would have to come out, but just something between you and God. I don't believe God is going to bring that thing up or let other people bring that up when you've truly and genuinely repented before him. But when we just sweep things under the rug, that's when they can come back and bite us. So look at what's written here in James, Jacob, chapter 2. For whoever keeps the entire law, yet falls in one point, is guilty of breaking it all. For he who said, do not commit adultery, also said, do not murder. So if you do not commit adultery, but you do murder, you are a lawbreaker. Speak and act as those who will be judged by the law of freedom. For judgment is without mercy to the one who hasn't shown mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. That's a very deep verse and passage, and one that for many years I felt I need to dig into and understand even more, that there's more that's being said there. Because we know that James, Jacob, is exalting God as the judge and saying the judge stands at the door. And writing to Jewish believers in Yeshua, for sure he is a man who appreciates divine justice and that God's judgments in the earth are a good thing. Yet he also knows that none of us stand without mercy. And that is how we must deal with others. Yes, there are rights and wrongs. Yes, I have been involved with removing people from ministry because of sin in their lives, especially when they weren't repentant. Yes, I've been involved with restoring people from ministry. Yes, we've had students that have had to step down because of sin in their lives, or we've had to put out of the school, and students that we have restored that are thriving and doing great works for God many years later. I'm talking about the attitude of our heart, that you don't want to throw stones at those who are fallen. And look at this, an exhortation from Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 5. It's talking about elders who sin, and the Greek would point to elders who continue in sin. In other words, they are unrepentant, all right? They are not responding to the calls to repent. And it says this in verse 19, don't accept an accusation against an elder unless it is supported by two or three witnesses. Then it says this, publicly rebuke those who sin. And you can make a good case for it, meaning those who continue to sin, persist in sin. You publicly rebuke them so that the rest will also be afraid. A few times over the years, we were involved as a church fellowship congregation I was part of many years ago with excommunicating someone that was persisting in sin and divisive and destructive behavior. And we warned and reached out to and warned and reached out to and appealed to and reached out to and appealed to and brought witnesses to speak with. And the person kept going about their destructive behavior, after which we had to excommunicate them. And I remember it was a sober affair and with much prayer for the individual. And I remember going home, searching my own heart, looking at my own life. So here's what I'd love to see. I'd love to see a year from now, Matt Lauer getting up and saying, you know, this was the lowest point of my life, the most embarrassing, painful moment in my life. But God used it to wake me up and show me what really matters. I mean, he's a married man with kids. God uses to wake me up and get hold of me, and now I'm living a brand new life. Let's pray for redemption in the midst of the mess. Yeah, things are being shaken. Let's see what God is going to do in a redemptive way. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back. I've got some very intense quotes, quotes of life I want to read to you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is a joy to be with you today on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You know, it's one thing to talk about the pro-life movement. It's one thing to talk about the importance of standing against abortion and offering life and hope to mothers and children. It's another thing to change our mentality. So I have a question for you. How have we embraced in America a mentality of death, a culture of death? I want to talk to you about that in a moment. There are some really interesting quotes from people, you could say, on both sides of the abortion debate. And they are eye-opening quotes. There's one that is very, very revealing by Camille Paglia. Camille Paglia is a journalist. She is an intellectual. She is an outspoken lesbian feminist. She is an atheist. And listen to what she has to say. I have these quotes in my book, Saving a Sick America. Listen to what Camille Paglia had to say. She said, although I'm an atheist who worships only great nature, I recognize the superior moral beauty of religious doctrine that defends the sanctity of life. The quality of idea and language in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, for example, exceeds anything in grimly utilitarian feminism. In regard to the commandment, thou shalt not kill, the Catechism says, human life is sacred because from its beginning it involves the creative action of God. This is a lesbian feminist atheist who says this. Let me read a little more. She says, God alone is the Lord of life from its beginning until its end. No one can under any circumstance claim for himself the right directly to destroy an innocent human being. This is quoting from the Catholic Catechism. Or this, she quotes, human life must be respected and protected absolutely from the moment of conception. From the first moment of his existence, a human being must be recognized as having the rights of a person, among which is the inviolable right of every innocent being to life. She says, there's much more moral beauty here than utilitarian feminism, like, hey, just whatever's practical and works. She sees a moral beauty here. Now listen to someone from a very different perspective, a practicing devout Catholic like Mother Teresa. Listen to what she has to say. She has called abortion the greatest destroyer of love and peace today. And she says this, by abortion, the mother does not learn to love, but kills even her own child to solve her own problems. Any country that accepts abortion is not teaching its people to love, but to use violence to get what they want. And she asked, if we can accept that a mother can kill her own child, how can we tell other people not to kill one another? These are some staggering quotes, and they are not exaggerated. In other words, when we have a mentality that discards babies in the womb, when we have a mentality that does not recognize the sanctity of life beginning in the womb, when we have a mentality that does not protect the most innocent and the most unprotected, who theoretically should be in the safest place in the world, namely within their own mother's womb. When that is what happens, it brings us to a place where we really have a mentality of death, where we have a mentality where certain lives can be discarded. If you've had an abortion, there is hope, there's forgiveness, there's mercy in Jesus. He died for that sin too. He can bring healing to your life and give you hope for the future. But this is part of how we have developed a mentality of death and a culture of death in America, from our entertainment to our laws. And changing our hearts and minds is where it all starts. Hey, friends, just a quick reminder, this Saturday, go right now to lovelifecharlotte.com. Join us as thousands will be gathering for what will be an historic March for Life, Saturday morning, Charlotte, North Carolina. We'll be right back.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, it's really easy to focus on one particular thing and not look at the larger issues or problems. You know, you might be doing an analysis of a business and you see, well, the sales team is really not producing. Oh, well, the sales team is not producing because research and development is not giving them good current information. Oh, the sales team is not producing because the commission base on which they're functioning is not fair to them and they're not motivated enough. Or the sales team is not doing well because the sales manager beats them down all the time. You know, in other words, there could be many different reasons for it, or because they realize the product itself is faulty. So sometimes you have to look at larger issues and ask larger questions. And it's the same way as we are standing for life and fighting against abortion. And I mentioned on the air yesterday that a new report released from Centers for Disease Control says the most recent statistics they have, 2014, show a 20% drop in abortions in America. Now, one abortion is one too many, but the pro-life movement is making progress. It's been a long battle. There's been much sacrifice and the horrific loss of over 50 million babies along the way, but the pro-life movement is making progress. So, having said that, let's ask larger questions. How do we have a culture of death in general in our society? Think of how much violence we now have in the media, in Hollywood, in movies, in TV. It's just kind of an always thing, always there. The blood, the shooting, the gore, and it's just so commonplace. And it's not like you're watching a war documentary where this is part of the horrible history and you sit there and mourn and grieve. This is stuff that we're being entertained by. Do you remember when West Side Story was the Academy Award winner in 1961? I was 6 years old at the time, but I remember talk about the movie. And I do remember seeing the movie as a boy, but there was controversy because it was, quote, so violent. Go back and watch it and consider that was a violent movie then. You got the gangs wearing jackets and ties, and it's a musical dancing in the streets, and it's not vulgar dancing either, right, as far as I recall. And you know, I saw excerpts of it maybe 15 years ago and was kind of shocked by the tameness of it. But the point is that was controversial. Look at old Hollywood movies, whether it's a cowboy movie, whether it's a crime movie. And the good guy ends up winning. You're not allowed to have the bad guy, the criminal, ultimately triumph. And it's not all kinds of blood and gore the way we have it today, where, I mean, it comes splattering off the screen. But it's not just there. How about video games? Years back, got my first computer in 1985. A couple years after that, with one of the computers I got or software upgrade, whatever it was, there was a video game, and you went, you're captured in some Nazi prison, and maybe a famous game today, I don't know, but you're talking over 30 years ago now, or roughly 30 years ago. So almost 30 years ago, because I remember where I lived when I got it. And I remember you're playing this game, and you break out of your prison cell. And you're armed and you have a certain amount of energy and you got to, you know, you're trying to run and you got to kill these soldiers before they kill you. And then you've got to get their weapon and that ups your energy level and whatever. So I'm playing this thing little video game. Let me check this thing out. And then next thing I run out of energy. I get shot and the screen is just blood. This is in the earliest days of color screens and the graphics weren't any, I mean, they're be ridiculous compared to today, but I thought, yuck, that's it. Took the game off the computer and never touched it again. I mean, that would be laughable compared to what's out there now. And people say, I play that all day long. Doesn't affect me. I say it affects you. I say the fact that you say it doesn't affect you at all affects you. Unless you say, well, look, I'd like to be the good guy and take down the bad guy, and that's my release and relief in doing that, and you know, I enjoy it. It's like, and you'd be okay with your little kids watching that? and you'd be okay from doing that, going immediately into the presence of God and worship and prayer? Yes, and there's been enough study that's been done to find a correlation between violent video games and between acts of violence or people getting more violent, maybe someone that's unstable, more prone to it or more desensitized. You know, the Columbine killers is their first act of murder, right? And they're going through the hallways laughing as they're shooting people. Well, how many years did they play violent video games and watch movies like Natural Born Killers? They became desensitized. And I'm not equating that to, say, watching The Walking Dead or some vampire, modern vampire movie, but isn't it peculiar that there's so much focus on the dead and the dying and blood and guts? And then even endless crime shows, some of them can be very well done and even with moral lessons, but constant focus on dead bodies, and there's something to it. So I want to give you a little experiment. I do this in my book, Saving a Sick America, all right? So I want to suggest that you do something, just something to try. Again, this is from my book, Saving a Sick America. By the way, if you don't have it, now's a great time to get it. It's just about half price for the hardcover on Amazon. So if you go to Amazon.com, order the hardcover. It's just about half price. So it's a great time to get the book. But here are some suggestions. Here's a little challenge that I give in the book. First, go about your normal activities, normal daily activities, watching and reading and listening to what you normally watch and read and listen to. But this time, take note of how much death is involved. So in other words, just live your normal life. Do what you normally do, but just track it. Take note of it. Video games I play, movies I watch, TV shows I watch, things that I read. How much focus is on death? How many images of the dead and dying? How many corpses? How much graphic violence? How much death are you seeing by choice, not by necessity, over the course of a week? I'm not talking about part of your job involves death. I'm not talking about you're researching things and part of it you have to research the violence. I'm not talking about reading about the latest terror attack and looking at the images just so that you feel the pain and the weight of what happened. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being entertained by death, dying, graphic violence. Just note in the course of a day, in the course of a week, in the course of a month, how much is part of your day. That's number one. Second, if you realize that you're being influenced by a culture of death, then take a 30-day break from all forms of death-related media entertainment, be it video games or favorite TV shows or gratuitously violent novels. Then third, immerse yourself in Words of Life. Again, these are recommendations I give in Saving a Sick America. If you have the book already, this is in the chapter From the Walking Dead to a Culture of Life. Immerse yourself in Words of Life. I would encourage you to read several chapters from Proverbs and the Gospel of John each day, noticing the constant emphasis on life. As the voice of wisdom says in Proverbs 8, "For whoever finds me finds life," Proverbs 8, "and obtains favor from the Lord, but he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me love death." That's Proverbs 8, 35, 36. And then fourth, when you spend time in prayer, ask God to flood your heart with his life and to give you the perspective of life, to see the world as he would have you see it. And then fifth, after 30 days, ask the Lord how he would have you to live. You might be surprised to see how your perspectives have changed. In the words of Paul, Philippians 4:8, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things." Friends, this is some of the counsel that I give in Saving a Sick America to help us renew our hearts, renew our minds, and to develop a mentality of life. I know for a period of years, I didn't watch any violent sports, and you know, I'd been so into watching boxing in years past that I just quit watching any violent sports and did it for years. And when someone wanted me to see one particular sporting event and it was pretty violent, I mean, not horrifically violent, but pretty violent, I was like, oh, I just could hardly watch it. And then, to be honest, got used to it. Yeah, and watch this and watch that. And yeah, I mean, I don't like to see the real bad violence. It's like, oh, look the other way, but you get used to it. Listen, I don't want to get used to something that's displeasing to God. I'm not telling you everything you should or shouldn't want. That's for you to work out between you and the Lord, unless the Word explicitly addresses it. I'm just saying, better to be sensitive than to be desensitized. And we become desensitized by this constant immersion of filth and junk and violence. Am I making sense? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, let me thank all of you who helped us, who sent in gifts on Giving Tuesday yesterday. Thanks so much for your generosity. Year-end giving really helps us. If you haven't done it yet, by all means, stand with us. It helps so much towards the end of the year. And I will be traveling to India, God willing, on Saturday, participating in Love Life Charlotte Saturday morning, going straight from there to the airport. That's the plan, unless my flights get changed yet again. But going to India, it's an expensive trip, and we go there to give and pour out. So thank you so much for giving and standing with us. And if you say, you know, man, we appreciate all these videos you put out. We appreciate the live stream of your radio show on video as well. We love watching it. Then, hey, stand with us. Go to our GoFundMe page. It is GoFundMe.com/AskDrBrownStudio. GoFundMe.com/AskDrBrown, A-S-K-D-R Brown Studio. As you go there and donate, again, thanks for all who've stood with us and helped us there. In the coming days, we're going to have an exciting update that's posted there too. And a lot of good things happening, but it's partnership. So pat yourself on the back. Those of you who pray for us, those of you who are our monthly supporters, our torchbearers, the backbone of this ministry, those of you who help us with generous one-time gifts, those of you who've given a GoFundMe, those of you who share our articles and share our videos and tell people to listen to the podcast or watch the show, thank you. Thank you. We're doing this together. Give yourself a pat on the back because you share in the reward. Before I come back to this issue of desensitizing, let me just tell you something funny that happened yesterday. I got a real kick out of it. I always love it when somebody recognizes my voice. I always get a kick out of that. You know, I was walking in Jerusalem, in the old city of Jerusalem, back in, was this February? February it was. And a guy comes up behind me, a pastor, maybe you're listening, Pastor James, I believe, from England. I think it was James. And Dr. Brown, I listened to you on the radio, or I listened to your podcast. He heard me talking to someone and recognized my voice. I was voting one time, and I was talking to the woman who's telling us, you know, what to fill out on a form, you know, to sign in. And there was a woman next to me. She was looking down, signing in. I was talking to the other woman. And as I'm talking, the woman, without looking up, she goes, "Dr. Brown, my husband and I love your show." That blesses me because I'm doing this for you. I mean, we're in this together. I don't have some ego where I need to be sitting here talking. I'm trying to serve you and be your voice. So I always love that when it happens, you know, in an airport or a hotel, or, you know, I was trying to get my room key wasn't working at a hotel in Dallas. And I went downstairs. I said, "Hey, I need another room key." They said, "Do you have your ID?" I said, "My ID's back in the room. You know, it's in my room. That's where my wallet is." And he goes, "Dr. Brown, I listened to your show." I said, I guess we did voice recognition. So he knew it was me. Well, anyway, I always get a kick out of that. And I just love the fact that it's all family. You know what I'm saying? I just enjoy it. It's all family. And it means so much to me because I can't see you physically, but I always know you're there listening. I think of many of you. Over the years, we've gotten so many calls, and I've met so many listeners and so many viewers that I think of you, honestly. I'll be talking about something, and I think, oh, probably so-and-so's listening to this because they listen every day, and this is their take on it. Or I wonder what this one thinks, or I hope this one is listening because it's good for them. Generally, that's how I feel. So I go into Walmart yesterday to make a stop, and just right, well, maybe 10 minutes from our studio. And as I'm walking in, there's a gal there, Salvation Army, young gal, and I'll just give details to paint a picture. She's a young white lady, and she's there, Salvation Army outfit, and she smiles. She goes, "I know you, I know you," and I just smile. I mean, different people know us from different settings, whatever, you know, the vast majority of the people on the planet don't know me. We understand that. So I just smiled and said, "Unfortunately, I'm just using my credit card. I don't have a dime on me to give." And she goes, "Next time." I said, "Yeah, God bless you. Have a great day." I came out like 2 minutes later because they didn't have what I was looking for. And now there's a black guy with dreadlocks. And he stops me on the way. He goes, "Are you the YouTuber? Are you the YouTuber?" And I said to him, "Well, maybe. There are plenty of people on YouTube. We're not the biggest on it. Plenty of people millions of times bigger than us on YouTube." And I said, "Well, yeah." He goes, "Well, she's talking about you. She really wants to meet you." So I went over and we talked a little bit. And I said, "Hey, I want to send you a free book." And she goes, "You're the one they shut down your YouTube account." I said, "Yeah, they demonetized a lot of our stuff." I said, "It's getting better, though. You know, there are more and more of the stuff's getting approved. We have to keep fighting every inch, but they seem to be doing better." And we had a friendly chat. And anyway, I was smiling just because of her enthusiasm and her thinking, like, how can I even go out in public? You know, everybody know. I said, "Hey, it's a big world. Maybe I could walk through Walmart, walk in and out, and no problem. I'm not going to get swarmed with people. That's not an issue." But what warmed my heart was this. We got a great team working together here, devoted team in our studio and working around the clock in different ways to help us get the message out to you. And that's what warms my heart, that people are listening and people are reading and people are watching. And by God's grace, we're getting a message out and people are being impacted. But I told you that story for this reason. That's us. That's our joy together. So let's really pray. It's my constant prayer. That God would deepen our message, that God would amplify our message, that God would intensify our message, that it would come with greater anointing and greater fire and greater precision and greater clarity, and that God would expand our reach to more and more people. If you told me 5 years ago we'd be reaching everyone we're reaching today, I'd think it was awesome, but I look at it today, it's, man, we're just scratching the surface. We want to touch this generation. We want to touch the nations. We want to see Israel saved. We want to make an impact. So back to where I started about desensitizing our consciences, I want to encourage you, no man, no woman is greater than who they really are on the inside. We can talk well, we can write well, we can sing well, we can produce well, we can do all kinds of things well, but who are we really? Let me encourage you in the days ahead, we have maybe some holiday time, some downtime, go after God for your own life and say, "God, make me more and more like your son. God, where there's compromise in my life, where I become accustomed to something, where I'm backslidden and don't know it, where I've left my first love, where I've gone away from key convictions, Lord, where there's something displeasing, show me, reveal it. Lord, I want to be one that when the light shines on me, it reflects something good. It doesn't expose darkness. It doesn't expose corruption. I want to be one of those that can bring everything into the light. No skeletons in the closet. No hidden sins that I have to cover with hoping nobody will find them. No hypocrisy where people say, well, you preach one thing and live another. I want to be a wholehearted servant of the Lord. And I believe that's your heart as well. So while you pray for others, that's good. And pray for our country, that's good. And pray for needs to be met, that's good. Pray for yourself. God, make me more and more like your son. God, conform me more and more to the image of Jesus. That's God's ultimate plan and destiny for each of us. Let that be your prayer. Back with you for Thoroughly Jewish Thursday tomorrow. Shake.